Hello and welcome to the Word with Webb podcast. I'm Eric and I'm here with the Reverend Dr. Richard Webb.
Howdy.
In this show, we get a chance to nerd out on a variety of biblical topics with Pastor Richard.
This one's going to be extra fun.
Yeah. But before we do that, I want to thank you for tuning into this episode and would like to ask you a quick favor. Our mission here at Hope is to reach out to the world around us and share the everlasting love of Jesus Christ. So if you could take a second to rate and review the show and maybe send it to a friend, that's one thing you can do to help reach more people. Also, if you ever have any questions for Richard or topics you'd like to hear discussed on the show, you can submit those by clicking the link in the description. That's linktree.com/wordwithwebb. So in today's episode, as I'm sure you can tell by the title of the episode, God's chosen people and what that means. As I was preparing questions to ask you, Richard, it seemed like there was a lot of overlap between the predestination episode that we did a season or two ago? Mm-hmm. And so in this episode, our goal is to take this in a little bit different way. So if you're listening to this and thinking, I think that might be something they've already discussed. Well, hopefully it's not.
Okay, I'm going to throw out a super provocative statement. Our goal in this episode is actually to render the classical predestination doctrines a little bit obsolete. Hmm. You know, we're just going to invent a new heresy. No, seriously, we're not going to do that. But we want to take a different run at how God works with his creation and with his people throughout history that we think is more satisfying than the typical predestination doctrines.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So to kind of kick that off, how was this not just a rehash of the predestination episode? Can you explain that?
Yeah, predestination, and I'll start with reform because it's the easiest one to explain, is basically where God, before creation, decides who will be elect or chosen for salvation and who will be elect or chosen for damnation. Mm-hmm. And so they are predestined to that. And they would use things like, well, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. So he clearly hardened him for what they would call perdition, or again, for damnation. And they would talk about Judas, they would quote the quote in Acts 1 where he is, he was destined to be the son of perdition, in other words, the son of damnation. Hmm. And so there's all this language where it seems that God handpicked people to go to heaven or hell, or to be good or be evil. Mm-hmm. And we can quibble about single predestination, double predestination. I do think single predestination takes more account of the biblical data than double predestination does. Mm-hmm. The other big problem with any predestination scheme is when they were all kind of came together during the Reformation, they were all answering, at least the Reformed one was answering a cause and effect question. If I'm saved, what caused it? Mm-hmm. If it's not my works, then what is it?
Yeah.
And what they came up with is predestination, mm-hmm. where in the Lutheran tradition, and we won't spend much time on this, it was God's choice for you, but not all the way back before time. It was God's choice for you right on the ground, mm-hmm. just like God's choice was for the 12 disciples. Now, this is leaking a little bit into where we're going to go. Mm-hmm. And there isn't, and so the function of predestination in the Lutheran tradition was to help you tell your testimony, not to describe who's in and who's out. And in fact, if you ask a Lutheran prof who's in and who's out, mm-hmm. what they will probably tell you is, well, that's God's business, rather than, and they won't even tell you how he does it. They'll say that's all his business. Mm-hmm. All we know is if we are following Jesus, it is by the power of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And if we are not following Jesus, it is the power of our own self-will. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get this contradiction in the Lutheran tradition that, the people who are truly exercising their free will are exercising it to self-destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in a curious way, by the power of the Holy Spirit, if you're following Jesus, you've surrendered your free will. Mm-hmm. So that's enough of Lutheran theology. But the whole thing of what we want to do is look at how God works on the ground in terms of choosing. Mm-hmm. And what is he choosing them for? Mm-hmm. And can chosenness be resisted? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. So I think the concept of being chosen is a much more messy process and can mean different things with different in different contexts. Mm-hmm. But it's probably one of the major literary concepts running through the narrative of the Old and New Testament is God's choice and choice for us.
Mm-hmm. And if you are interested in hearing more about the predestination part of it, like we said earlier, there is an episode we did called Free Will and Predestination. I think that was in season one or two that you can go back and listen to. But right before we hit record, you said something that I want to, that kind of helped me frame this, is that predestination would be behind the curtain view, and this is more the in front of the curtain view. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, behind the curtain means that predestination, again, it was done before the dawn of time. So I think of that in a play as behind the curtain. You know, that's where your sound effects people are. That's where your producer is. That's the person who wrote the script, making sure the script is followed. Mm-hmm. So predestination is like God was, he wrote the script. And now we're on stage acting out very precisely a script that God wrote beforehand. That's sometimes called theological determinism. There's also a secular determinism, but both, in both cases, they say your choices are not meaningful. When we talk about the Lutheran understanding of let's get back to chosenness. We're not worrying about the Lutheran understanding right now. But when we talk about chosenness, we think it covers the same ground, but we're saying the truth is the writer comes forward and he doesn't write the script ahead of time. Often he writes the script on the spot. So you think about like improv comedy. Is there are things that God had visions for that he would accomplish, you know, big, big, long-term visions. But you can tell that God is also quite agile. So you've got the writer as part of the cast. Which I think is fascinating. Now, when the writer writes something, it happens. But the writer is interacting with the evolving context. Not because he has to. So this isn't like limiting God or anything. But that's the way he's chosen to play out the story of God and humanity.
That's interesting because just the way you frame that, my wife and I just went to a comedy show not long ago. And this comedian is known for crowd work. Like asking the crowd things, having someone say something out, and then responding, which cannot be written. But as we left thinking, oh, he had a direction he was taking the entire story. But in between the details, every show is going to be different because he was interacting with the crowd. So I'm kind of picturing it that way. God interacting with us. He's got a overarching direction of history and the future, right? But also be able to, like you said, write it on the fly. It was a really interesting thing to experience because I've never seen other comedians like that, that the whole show was crowd work, but he knew where he was going with it. He just didn't know what was going to be said, you know? So that was kind of an interesting, anyway, that's the picture I've got now. And I think that helps me understand what you're talking about by, you know, even if we get into like free will and determinism, like what do we really have free will or is everything just laid out before us and we're just, we have no choice in the matter. Which goes down a lot of kind of weird.
Yes. All kinds of rabbit holes.
So, but where do we first encounter the idea of chosen, being chosen or chosenness in the biblical narrative? Like, where does that show up?
Genesis 1.
Okay.
And it says in the beginning, it was just chaos. It was wilderness and waste, and it was unendless, you know, unbounded water with no definition and dark. Those are the three major chaos symbols. And then it says, but the Spirit of God is up to something. And so the Spirit of God is moving through all of that. And then God starts making some very short commands. First one's, let there be light. And all of a sudden, he chooses to remake things. But he chooses it where he doesn't destroy the darkness. The light and the darkness come together to create time and days. So we begin to see already God's impulse towards redemption, because the darkness is not destroyed. it becomes helpful and useful. Mm-hmm. Then there's the waters, the next chaos symbol. And what does he do with them? He separates them, and ultimately the waters below become a home for animals. Mm-hmm. And the waters above water the ground. That hasn't shown up yet. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's doing, and separating, by the way, is a move towards order. Any ancient Middle Easterner would see a separation is a creation of order. And at the same time, now the waters have been redeemed. They're no longer just merely chaos places. Mm-hmm. And then you get the third one, which is then when the land comes forth, it's just wilderness and waste till the water comes raining down on it. Mm-hmm. And then God begins to make the wilderness and waste a garden. You know, he let there be trees, you know, and then we have all the animals from the swimming things to the flying things to the crawling things and to the grounders. Mm-hmm. And every one of them, you can see him making a choice. There's an incredible amount of intentionality. And then where this matters to us is when he slows the whole thing its way down, he gathers his divine counsel around him and says, let's make God in our image.
That's like man in our image?
Yeah, sorry, I got that a little backwards. Yeah. There's already a God.
Yeah,
let's make humanity in our image. And the plural of our image most likely is referring to the Trinity. But I think he's still got his divine counsel gathered around him. Mm-hmm. And then the story slows down, and we get a very specific thing of what God is making. And in fact, there's two of them, and it says in God's image like three times, and it also says to rule and subdue. So we it's very elaborate, and mm-hmm. we won't worry about explaining all that. Mm-hmm. But then there's a second story, which is equally intentional, where God creates stuff, and then out of the dust of the ground, he molds a human being who is lifeless until God breathes his spirit into him. Mm-hmm. So this is a spirit-breathed organism, which means God has not only chosen to create this person, but God in some ways has committed himself to this person because it's his spirit that animates him. Mm-hmm. So this is chosen, this pretty up close and intimate. Mm-hmm. Then it continues with various things. It's not good that the person be alone. Now we make two of them. Mm-hmm. We have very specific instructions on how the two relate to each other, how they're to treat each other, and how that comes right off the image of God. But all of that, this is God literally gives the human being some fairly detailed assignments about how they're to relate to God, how they relate to land, and how they're to relate to each other. Mm-hmm. I'd say they're very chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is chosenness then tied to purpose?
Yes, because they're given a purpose. It turns out rule and subdue literally mean take care of the land, mm-hmm. take care of each other, mm-hmm. and in a curious way, take care of God. Not that he needs it. But it's summarized in the great commandment, love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and that's the take care of God part. Mm-hmm. And then the love your neighbor as yourself is take care of each other part. And then the first instance of that is also to serve the land, and that word also means worship God. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are the purposes. Oh, then there's one other purpose, which is, you know, be fruitful, have a lot of fun, flourish, and have lots of kids. Mm-hmm. And again, that would make perfect sense with the first parents. Go populate the place. Mm-hmm. And so our assignment is to rule and subdue, and then under that is, you know, to watch out and care for stuff. And strange ruling and strange subduing, but that, you know, God loves flipping words on their head. Mm-hmm. And then the other is go represent me wherever you are because you're my image. And as well, you're doing it, have lots of fun and have lots of kids. Mm-hmm. That's high amount of purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So are those purposes in Genesis 1, are they universal? Like, do they apply to every person throughout history?
Yes. God, if you exist, God has chosen you for that destiny.
For loving God and loving your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And also representing God's rule on earth. Mm. In other words, we are responsible for the care and feeding of the land, mm-hmm. the care and feeding of each other, mm-hmm. And once again, those words break down with God, but there's always a triple responsibility. Mm-hmm. And no human being is exempt from that. That's why the concept of free will gets a little funny in Christian thought, because we walk out of the womb with a set of responsibilities and a destiny.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the most, or the second most well-selling book of all time, right, is The Purpose-Driven Life, mm-hmm. behind the Bible, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I think I've heard you and a lot of other people say this, that one of the biggest questions that we get, especially you as pastors, mm-hmm. Is like, what's my purpose in life?
Yeah.
That purpose that you're saying, is that, how do you distinguish between like someone's unique purpose then, mm-hmm. and their unique chosenness, and mm-hmm. their like the everyone having the same purpose and yeah. chosenness, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Because then the question is, how does each person uniquely carry out the general destiny of all humanity? Mm-hmm. So I would say your unique purpose is sort of like the executing of God's general purpose. So you come with a set of experiences, your family of origin, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You come with genetic pushes towards things, genetic strengths, and you know, and sometimes disabilities. Mm-hmm. You come with social conditioning, and that would be things beyond your family. And you also come with your life experiences, your traumas. You also come with your strengths. What are the things you just do really well? Mm-hmm. And, you know, strength is a new category, involves a lot of neuroscience. But all of those are part of you. And I would say that's half the thing. When I've done this or when someone did it for me, usually what they want to measure is kind of all my assets. But then sooner or later, they want to take a look at my life story and see where God shows up already. And it's often in my life story, whether I'm aware of it or not, that you see God already weaving his purposes through me. Mm-hmm. And he's also, and this is so amazing with God, is not only is he weaving his purposes through me, because it's not like he doesn't care about me and he's using me like, you know, just a chessboard piece to win a game. Mm-hmm. He's usually also weaving his healing through me. Mm-hmm. And then where meaningful choice comes in is, am I accepting his healing? Another word for that would be salvation. Mm-hmm. And am I accepting his purposes for me? Mm-hmm. And again, we behave just like Abraham and Sarah. Some on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we tend to accept God's purposes. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, who knows? And then Sundays, we have to flip a coin. Mm-hmm. And so just propose that when Abraham and Sarah misbehaved, it was a Tuesday or a Thursday or a Saturday. I'm being sarcastic. Don't take that literally. It's not in the Bible. But it for me, I encountered it in a theologian when he was talking about the rape of Hagar, and he said, yeah, it must be Tuesday. Mm.
are we getting too much into like mixing chosenness and purpose, or are those things... Would it be accurate to say those are the same?
No, I don't think they're the same. I mean, I think we can get into a very deep philosophical argument, but the grammar I'm using is chosen for a purpose.
Chosen for a purpose,
and,
okay.
And I'll tell you why, is because Christians and Israelites have confused chosen for entitlement and privilege. Mm. And in this case, chosen is for mission and responsibility, a.k.a. purpose. Mm-hmm. And that purpose always bends towards the neighbor. Mm-hmm. In other words, how am I carrying God's image towards the neighbor in my particularity? Or how will I build up the body of Christ in my particularity? And that's, again, that's service to the neighbor, mm-hmm. you know. Or how will I proclaim the gospel, the good news of God, to the neighbor in my unique way? you know, how has God shaped me to proclaim that the good news of God? Mm-hmm. You know, and then again, what are our specialties in the body of Christ? And we haven't even begun to talk about spiritual gifts. Mm-hmm. But all of that, I think, is the trajectory of chosenness. And when I say trajectory, that's another word for purpose.
Okay, so I was just writing this down. Not chosen for entitlement and privilege, but for purpose and...
Responsibility for that purpose.
Responsibility. Write that down.
Yeah. Or you might say assignment and responsibility, but that equals purpose.
Yeah. And so one of my questions coming up here mm-hmm. was, we often think of being chosen as something exclusive or special or, mm-hmm. or earned.
Yep.
And it sounds like that doesn't really fit with the biblical narrative.
No. Again, I just love Genesis 11 and 12 as a comparison of human identity and how God gets in there. Genesis 11, you know, a bunch of people, probably all the heads of the construction firms, you know, the movers and shakers in the city said, let us all gather together and make a great name for ourselves. They were really into image back then. Who says Madison Avenue had anything on them? And we will build a tower up to heaven and everybody will know us. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So then we have the next chapter where we have two nobodies. And we know they're really nobodies because they can't have kids. Mm-hmm. And they've been on the journey. Halfway through the journey to where their uncle's guiding them, mm-hmm. Or their father, I can't remember who, God gives Abraham a vision that says, keep on going, but go to Canaan. Mm-hmm. This is the land I will show you. Then I will make your nation great. I will bless your nation, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. Mm-hmm. So, boy, is that a purpose.
Yeah. So, Abraham and guys like Joseph and Jacob and mm-hmm. David, mm-hmm. they were obviously chosen, but chosen in a uniquely special way. Is their chosenness different than anyone else's?
No. Now, it's interesting. So let's walk through that family. This is an excellent case study of the interweaving of God's intention for us and our intention for us. Mm-hmm. So I think I mentioned earlier on, oh, that was in another thing. I get confused. Which podcast did I say that at? You see over and over again, Abraham and Sarah rebelling against God's purposes for them. Mm-hmm. And it results with a whole lot of collateral damage on other people. Mm-hmm. So their choices are meaningful, all right. They hurt people. Mm. And then they go back and trust God's choices some more, and some good stuff happens. Then Isaac and Rebecca, we don't know a ton of them about parents other than they're playing their two kids off each other. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was part of God's purpose. Mm-hmm. It creates family chaos. Mm-hmm. So notice, you may be chosen, but your family may be a mess. Mm-hmm. And so how is God going to accomplish his purposes through you? Mm-hmm. If you're being such a mess,
yeah,
that's the question that goes, and then it gets worse. You get then one of the sons, Jacob, who probably has the least amount of character in the family, makes an even bigger mess in basically a pissing contest with his uncle Laban, where his two daughters are the prize they're fighting over. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that Jacob doesn't want the oldest because he doesn't like her, doesn't look pretty or something. Mm-hmm. And yet Laban decides to get Jacob good and drunk and trick her. And in the marriage bed is the older daughter, Leah. But Jacob's too soused to tell the difference. They have sex together, which means now they're married. He wakes up and he's looking straight at someone he doesn't want. Mm-hmm. And imagine Jacob and the fury, because he's in love with Rebecca. Mm-hmm. And imagine Leah and her despair that she sees nothing but scorn in her husband's eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, this is the messiness inside chosenness.
Yeah.
It degenerates all the way down to spoiled brat Joseph. And with spoiled brat Joseph, you know, you're thinking at this point, because they want to kill him, is any good reader is thinking, how on earth is God's purposes going to be forwarded here? Mm-hmm. And then they are. Mm-hmm. And in fact, at the very end of it, we reveal God's purposes for and how he wove himself through this very degenerate family. Mm-hmm. And it, when Joseph sums it up, you meant it for evil, and you might as well talk about all three generations, mm-hmm. but God meant it for the good and saving of many lives. Mm-hmm. So we see this very interesting, agile way that God weaves his purposes through human decisions. Mm-hmm. So they have an identity as chosen, but they're not really... which, again, chosen for an assignment and a mission, a mm-hmm. purpose. Mm-hmm. But the humans are not real good at staying on game.
Yeah.
And then God is constantly bringing them back on game. Mm-hmm. Notice this is way different than God, you know, standing before the time and just writing a script out. Mm-hmm. I mean, humans are writing a script too, but it's really lousy.
Yeah.
And then God goes and rewrites the script. Mm-hmm. You know, so this dynamic, everything's done in front of the curtain.
Mm-hmm. So is there part of it, part of the story that wants us to identify with those people,
mm-hmm.
In their seeing them as they were chosen,
mm-hmm.
but not because they earned it in any special way?
Yeah. I believe every one of them has been chosen. We are chosen for somebody else.
Yeah.
So. And this gets all distorted if the purpose of Christianity is to go to heaven when you die. Mm. Then there's no purpose to be chosen other than to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Then it really is about entitlement and privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're not into a predestination scheme, it's about somehow earning it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
And where if we get heaven back where it belongs on the ground, again, it also is in the afterlife, and it's for eternity. We're pro-heaven, mm-hmm. and we're pro-eternity, and we're pro-afterlife.
Yeah.
But heaven starts on the ground with God and his purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole point was that heaven and earth would be joined back together, because
yeah.
it was the rebellion of our parents that blew the two, I'm going to call them realms, apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think of ourselves and our own chosenness, first of all, we've been chosen as created creatures. And then we have also are chosen as objects of God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Scripture says everyone gets a chance to say yes to Jesus, because the problem of humanity is not ignorance or lack of perfection, but rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to know what you're rebelling against, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, some of that's above our pay grade, where the Bible's silent on how that all works out.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, there have been places where Christ intervened and sometimes hijacked some really bad church life and some really bad theology, but got me there anyways.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked earlier about when I went to Hume Lake Bible Camp and they showed atomic bomb films and people's skin falling off, and says, that'll happen to you if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I thought Jesus was a real jerk, but I wanted to go to his heaven, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So God's like, man, my heart breaks that you think I'm that way, and I'm really kind of angry at the people who showed those films.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to say yes because I want you in anyway.
Yeah.
And so I think that things like that were the beginning of where God began to wove his purposes in me. Now, I was baptized as a baby, so theologically he started way back then.
Mm-hmm.
He kept bringing me into encounters. And as I move along in my personal journey, I can see more and more interventions, mostly through people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see it where he'll work in circumstances to teach me life lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, at the age of 66, you keep learning life lessons.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty to learn.
Yeah.
But so in a lot of ways, I am working out the implications of my chosenness so that I can represent God best to the neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much missional,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do believe that God's chosenness is so someone else experiences love and then can be caught up in God's destiny,
mm-hmm.
which again, you know, and so let's think of chosenness like a story.
Mm-hmm.
So we have God's story.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was writing my thesis, I talked about how people encounter God's story And they often encounter people around them, like a church, where that story is being more or less embodied. Mm-hmm. When they say yes, if that's what they do, then usually there's a point of discovery where they begin to ask God, where have you been in my story? Mm-hmm. For some people, they begin to discover there's a lot of places. Mm-hmm. Other people, it's time to wrestle like Job did, mm-hmm. and like Jacob did. Mm-hmm. And then what in that wrestling and in that discovery, we begin to ask a different question, where do I belong in your story, God? And so it's no longer about God fitting into my story. Mm-hmm. And that's when we begin to get issues of destiny and purpose and chosenness, because mm-hmm. now we will realize we're caught up in God's good story to bring heaven back to earth. Mm-hmm. And he has said, I want you to be a part of this project. Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back a little bit to, I had originally said that we think of being chosen as something exclusive or special. Mm-hmm. And I noticed how you then reframed it as saying, well, it's not about entitlement and privilege. Mm-hmm. And so my mind is going to, okay, in Genesis 1, humans are created very good. So they mm-hmm. are created special in some way. But what you were reframing as, whether you knew it or not, was we're special for mission, but not special for privilege. And so maybe that's a distinction. But also, there's this statement where, you know, Jacob I love, but Esau I hated. So this mm-hmm. idea of Jacob, who becomes Israel,
yeah.
being the chosen mm-hmm. one, but mm-hmm. there's this specially chosen seemingly for privilege. Right.
It looks like that. In fact, you can make a Bible reading, and has been done several times, where chosen is for privilege.
Okay.
And that would be one of the proof texts. And there's several in the New Testament that are often used as proof texts.
Okay.
I'd say a couple things. One is that's a hyperbole.
Okay.
And, you know, Esau I hated, Jacob I loved. But we know this. If we back up one generation, we have the immigrant. We've often called her Hagar. It turns out that that's not a real name, that's just a label.
Oh, okay.
And often when the Bible wants to indicate an extremely powerless and vulnerable person, we won't know their name. Mm-hmm. Because they're sort of helping us understand the people around her regard her as so unimportant that the name is not significant. So Hagar just means the immigrant.
Is that something we see in, like, in the original language?
Then? Yeah,
that
yeah.
It just doesn't, yeah. It translates differently in English Bibles?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I mean, the hay means the, and gar means immigrant.
Okay.
And basically, she was a slave that Abraham walked out of Egypt with, among other slaves. So here she is in a situation that she has no choice in the matter. Abraham and Sarah get a little impatient with God that they're not having a kid. So they say, let's rape Hagar. Let's rape the immigrant. And then after a while, Sarah's having second thoughts and she gets jealous. Mm-hmm. She's thinking, oh, my husband's going to take her as the primary wife and kick me down to a secondary wife. Mm-hmm. And then her kid will get all the inheritance. And what will I be left with? Mm-hmm. She goes to Abraham she initially goes and just makes life miserable for Hagar. Mm-hmm. Hagar runs into the desert. Mm-hmm. And it's in that episode and the other when she has been actually driven out in the desert by Abraham and Sarah, that God comes and says, your son will also have a nation and I will bless him. Mm-hmm. And so she becomes the mother of another nation. So very clearly, God can bless other people who aren't in the line of his purposes. Mm-hmm. And what I mean that is not that Ishmael's nation, you know, is unimportant to God, or God just, you know, swats it away like a useless toy. Mm-hmm. But that... when God chooses a group, it's for the sake of every other group. That's his ideal. Mm-hmm. So Jacob I chose, who's a complete Shlemiel, I mean, if you look at Jacob's character, Esau is way better. He doesn't have all the bulbs in the chandelier, but he seems to be of good character. You know, and Jacob just constantly takes advantage of him. So there you actually have someone who's oppressing someone who's somewhat powerless to resist it. He's not very bright. And God says, I'm going to work with that guy. Everybody's like, what? No, I'll work with that guy. You'll see. So God was working. God chooses Jacob for Esau's sake. Now, you know, and God is choosing Jacob for the sake of also the Midianites, the Egyptians. You know, because through Jacob comes Joseph, who not only saves his fellow Hebrews, but saves the entire Egyptian empire during the famine. And you know, in fact, Pharaoh's so grateful, Pharaoh gives the upper-class suburbs and the best fields, you know, to the Hebrews. I mean, they got the best spot in Egypt, you know, and that's a pretty high level of status. So we can tell that the chosen people, when those around them say yes and trust the God of the chosen people, that things go extremely well. When the nations around them oppress the chosen people, things go completely bad because God isn't going to, you know, put up with the extermination of his people, because ultimately he wants to bless Egypt through them anyways. So he will intervene against Egypt for the sake of his people, so that ultimately on behalf of Egypt, his people can bless them.
Okay.
That was a little complicated.
So it goes back to the idea of blessed to be a blessing, right? Is blessing the same, being blessed the same as being chosen then? And, oh, well, I'll leave it at that because I've got several other questions to follow up on.
That comes from, again, the primal promises to Abraham and Sarah. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. And all the nations around the earth will be blessed. So I don't think it's synonymous with being chosen, but it's part of the job assignment.
The purpose, the purpose that comes from being chosen, is that a blessing?
Yes. Okay. In other words, the purpose of Abraham and Sarah's of chosenness is to be a blessing to the world, and as that blessing gets detailed out, their lineage has been chosen to be the way God restores the brokenness of the world.
So the blessing was always there even before the promise to Abraham, right? Like from Genesis 1, like the purpose given to Adam and Eve was a blessing to them.
And because God saw it was good and he blessed them.
So, okay, then if we go to Hagar and where God says, well, I will bless your son. Typically we think of the God's chosen people as being Israel, right? And so if God's giving a blessing and a purpose to the nations are outside of Israel, then what's the difference in the chosenness? And is there a difference in the chosenness of say, the Amalekites and Israel?
I would say, I'm going to stick for a second with the Egyptians because this one's the easiest test case study. I would say in general, all people are chosen. Again, these are people who say yes, but for different assignments. So Egypt initially said yes because, you know, Pharaoh recognized Joseph's wisdom, knew it came from a god, and welcomed Joseph and his god all the way up to being prime minister. So and then privileged him and his family. Because he knew that some God was with them. So that's saying yes to the people that God has chosen. And so then Israel was able to act out its vocation of chosenness by being a blessing to Egypt. And so, I mean, and Pharaoh so highly regarded Joseph that he allowed him to give his father Jacob a royal burial fit only for other pharaohs. That's a pretty big deal. And so during the time of Joseph until his death, Israel was definitely fulfilling its mission to be a blessing to another nation. Now, what happens is a Pharaoh arises who confuses that blessing with potential adversaries and sabotage, and it's a big fat mess. Mm-hmm. And we know that sometimes Israel can, you know, be a curse to people. They have in the past, and they can be. So it could also be that Israel started behaving a little cursey rather than blessing. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of theories. Like, there are some things that Joseph does that are kind of Jacob-y to the people of Israel, people of Egypt, where he basically nationalizes everything. And it's rather, shall we say, shrewdly done. You wonder, oh, is that a little bit of your daddy leaking out? You know? And then there's some speculation that he or his, well, some of his offspring maybe have become a line of pharaohs. And again, none of this is in the Bible, but this would help me explain it if this were true. And they were called the Ibri, the Hyksos, this line of pharaohs. And then they were finally overthrown and replaced by an ethnic Egyptian pharaoh. And it may be this pharaoh that says, we've had enough, you know, this will never happen again. You know, let's deal shrewdly with them as they have dealt shrewdly with us.
Yeah,
none of that's in the Bible. We have no evidence for it. But we do know that that would have been typical Israelite behavior, is to take advantage of their chosenness at the expense of the neighbor, only to have the neighbor return the compliment.
So if all people are chosen, we'll keep with that example of the Egyptians and the Israelites, right? All of them are chosen. They're chosen to be a blessing to others. Then what's the difference in God's chosen people, Israel? Because there's something different about them, right, in the Bible.
We may have generically, as human beings, been chosen to be a blessing to others. But what sin has done is we have now made the choice, speaking of chosenness, to be only a blessing to ourselves. And in doing that, we are now a curse to those around us. We have flicked the primary chosenness on its head. And instead of blessing each other, we curse each other by our behavior. So Israel's unique mission is to be the way to restore this. And in other words, it was supposed to be through Israel that the world would be reconciled to God, and God would become the world's king again. And the knowledge of Yahweh would be as the waters cover the sea. Israel keeps failing. In fact, there is no happy ending in the Old Testament. There's sort of a question of what's going to happen now, because even after they build the second temple, they dedicate the temple and nothing happens, which causes a lot of people to start weeping. And then Malachi and a little bit, I think, Nehemiah kind of go after the people saying, you're worse than you were before the exile. No wonder God is not inhabiting the temple. And then that's kind of where the story stops. You know, there are other stories in between, we call the apocryphal, but they don't really answer how's God going to get us out of this mess, because clearly the people they've chosen seem to be incapable of it. And so that sets us up with Jesus, and as N.T. Wright said, is Isaiah talks about this strange suffering servant, and sometimes it seems clear the suffering servant is Israel itself, because they have often suffered at the hands of other nations. Sometimes it seems to be a stand-in for Israel who is doing the suffering, a leader of Israel. And then sometimes it appears to be God himself coming down and rolling his sleeves up and he himself suffering on the behalf of the people. However it works out, Jesus, if you think of him as a phenomena, winds up embodying all three themes in the suffering sermon. He is an Israelite. So as along with other Israelites, he suffers the tyranny of the Romans and Herod's three sons and you know the corrupt priesthood and the Pharisees and also the Zealots, you know, so he's under that, and it's a mess, and poverty. at the same time, he is a stand-in for them because he, in a unique way, winds up taking it all on very personally because the Romans string him up. Mm-hmm. And both the whole religious establishment, one of the few times they come together because they really can't stand each other. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones who serve him up, mm-hmm. you know. And even then, he's abandoned by people who should be his loyal followers, and one betrays him, mm-hmm. other denies. So in a lot of ways, he carries utterly alone the consequences of the of Israel's disloyalty to the covenant mm-hmm. choice that mm-hmm. God made for them. And yet he's also God himself. Mm-hmm. And so, as N.T. Wright says, he's the one true Israelite as God himself who can actually carry out God's plans to restore the world through Israel. And it happens by God himself becoming Israel.
Gotcha. So let me just see if I got this right.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning, everyone is chosen. And that chosen is for a purpose, to be a blessing, to receive God's blessing, but also to bless others.
Mm-hmm.
And something goes wrong, mm-hmm. right? And Israel is uniquely chosen as the ones who, through whom the it'll all be put back together.
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting that right?
Yeah, their unique calling is to be the way God restores the world and breaks the power of sin.
And that's where Jesus is fulfilling the mission of Israel.
Right, because Israel apparently can't do it or won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it winds up taking somebody who can stay utterly focused on his mission, accept it as the core of his identity, and not be tempted off to other paths. And that mm-hmm. would be the temptation in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And again, the temptations, the other paths would be the terrorism of the zealots, the hyper-purity of the Pharisees, or the corruption and the cooperation with the Romans of the Sadducees, also a branch of Pharisees running out in the desert and just waiting for God to nuke everything.
Mm-hmm.
None of those are particularly redemptive behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
They're more self-preservation behaviors.
Mm.
And so Jesus literally does what he does in Genesis 1, where he looks, it looks good to him. So he mm-hmm. sees, it looks good to him, and then he blesses. In this case, he sees, it looks horrible, and he blesses.
Mm-hmm.
So normally when things look really bad, you do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And where human beings, when they see and it looks good to them, then they take.
Mm-hmm.
And when it looks bad to them, they destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of our MO.
Yeah.
And Jesus flips it all on his head. And even when it looks bad to him,
mm-hmm.
he gives his life for it.
Mm-hmm. So Jesus comes and he fulfills the mm-hmm. The purpose of Israel, the missional purpose of
mm-hmm.
Israel.
Mm-hmm.
How does he change who the chosen Israel, in the Israel sense, is, or mm-hmm. does he?
Well, this is interesting because according to the biblical writers, Israel stays in continuity and the Jesus movement becomes Israel. And again, we have to be careful not to let anti-Semites weaponize this. But basically, the way we now, as Christians, would define Israel is all those who trust in Israel's Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using very Jewish terms to describe the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, Israel did not stop being chosen, but it's a different Israel than the political Israel that's existing in the Middle East in 2025.
Yeah, right.
Very provocatively, some of the people who live there are chosen if they've received Israel's Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
But that, as a modern nation state, is not a chosen nation state.
Right.
I'm going to say something spicy. If I had a green card, could get me deported. Who knows? I'm a citizen. I could still get deported. Okay, that was brought to you by me just being silly.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have anything to do with our program. At any rate, So now let's stay on the ground and look at how Jesus chooses people. Mm-hmm. Because again, chosen, this is on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, literally God met Abraham and Sarah and said, have I got a deal for you? Mm-hmm. This is very different than a predestination way of thinking of things, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, here comes Jesus. And the first thing he does is he goes and finds people that nobody would recruit to be students of a Messiah, of a rabbi. Mm-hmm. And I love the first season of the Messiah when he's recruiting his people. I mean, even some of the initial recruits are shocked at further recruits. Mm-hmm. Peter in The Chosen displays utter contempt for Matthew.
Yeah.
And then later on, James and John display utter contempt for the rest of them, mm-hmm. Which is really funny because they portray John as not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, mm-hmm. but he thinks he's just all that in a bag of chips. Mm-hmm. So there's this, he seems to have gone out of his way to choose very stiff-necked, imperfect, messed up people. Mm-hmm. What I find interesting in the way The Chosen portrays this is there's a series of women that walk with the disciples, and this is not far from the mark, but the way they behave is they're the den mothers. Mm-hmm. They keep the boys in line. They seem to get Jesus way better than the guys do. Mm-hmm. You don't see them having anxiety when Jesus does something funny. Usually there's a knowing grin on Mary Magdalene's face, like, here it comes. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, this is going to be fun. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, if you've been rescued what she was rescued from, you're going to have a very wide imagination of what's possible with God.
Yeah.
So Jesus goes and chooses the wrong people, just like he chose the wrong person, Jacob, when Esau was a much nicer guy. Mm-hmm. And he then makes them ultimately the apostles, the ones who will be the leaders of the church. Now, we can see that proximity to Jesus changes lives. So the apostles Jesus chooses are very different when he sends them out for mission. Mm-hmm. And that begins the whole process of what it means to make disciples. And so he's actually given us the authority. Well, or once again, I would say it's through him, we become his instruments for choosing others. Mm-hmm. So that's often why it's kind of fun to say, God, guide me to a conversation today of someone that you think is ripe for the harvest.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about the opening chapter of Matthew's gospel, because you just painted the picture of, like, in The Chosen TV show where, mm-hmm. where Matthew is called,
yep.
and he's an unexpected person.
Yeah.
There's this genealogy at the beginning of Matthew where Ruth, Tamar, uh-huh. Rahab are included in this genealogy yeah, yeah. of Israel. Mm-hmm. And so am I understanding this right, that like when we get chosenness wrong, then Israel becomes an exclusive club of, well, like you said, of privilege, entitlement, mm-hmm. and Matthew, and even throughout the Old Testament, the people that are, it's meant to be a little bit shocking when someone who's not mm-hmm. Not a native Israelite mm-hmm. is then included.
Oh yeah.
And so Jesus is almost like going back to the original intent of mm-hmm. Israel as being a place where everyone's welcome and yep. included for mission to be a blessing, but we distort it by saying, oh, it's only these certain people who are allowed to be
yeah.
quote unquote Israel.
The one boundary around Israel is comprised of people who worship Israel's God. So yeah. you don't get to worship some other God and call yourself an Israelite.
Right. Okay.
And it's sort of like you don't get to jump off the Empire State Building and declare that gravity doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Yahweh exists. He's their God.
Yeah.
He formed them as a people.
Yeah.
You want in, trust him. Mm-hmm. And besides, he's trustworthy. He's got a good track record. So mm-hmm. it's a deal.
Yeah.
But no, this makes sense. So let's go to someone like Rahab. And I imagine that God's, you know, she's just about her business. She's either a prostitute mm-hmm. or she's running a brothel. It's mm-hmm. not quite clear. And again, we know that people become sex workers when they have to. Nobody does it because they think it's a good idea. You know, you will never have 4-year-old Susie, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be a sex worker. Mm-hmm. Someone was going to get the psychologist really fast mm-hmm. and then they call child services to see if there's already some abuse and mm-hmm. off we go. So Rahab was probably a widow or she was divorced by her husband. Again, women can't divorce. So she was essentially abandoned. And she had to figure out what to do, and you could beg, you could commit suicide, you could starve to death, or maybe be a prostitute. Mm-hmm. Or a family might take you in, but if they're as poor as you are, then there's no point. Mm-hmm. Well, we get our two spies, and they head on in, and instead of going and scouting the place out, they head in to get serviced. So already, this little spy mission seems to be falling apart before it even gets going. Mm-hmm. Worse than that, they seem to have been very obvious about it, because word has already written the king even before they can hit the sack, you know, which means they might have asked the palace guards, hey, where's the nearest brothel? And they might have recognized, oh, these are Hebrews. What are you doing? You know, so this is all going wrong. So in this story, the Hebrew scouts are the bad guys. And Rahab, when she hears that, you know, the king knows they're in the city, hides them. And then she says, I know that you're coming and your God is very, very big. So spare my life because I'm sparing your lives by hiding and lying to my king. I'm committing treason. And that's a, you know, capital offense. And then they arrange how with the red ribbon and all that. And then she becomes, I believe, the mother of Israel, a mother of Israel. And it's interesting how people get included, but I can imagine God weaving himself through her life, creating the sense that there's more to this than this. And even in the midst of her being a sex worker, just giving her a yearning for more, and also giving her a sense of values where she knows that what she's doing is not giving her life. And then here come, you know, two young clients from the Hebrews, and she's a little stunned. What are you doing here? You know, and whether they actually do the deed or not is irrelevant. But somewhere along the line, she says, the king is sending his spies to get you, and I will hide you. And then with Ruth, she is intermarried, and that's something that the Israelites ought not to have done. Once again, Israel sins first. You know, in the first case, it's the spies heading to a brothel. In this case, it's the family, because of a famine, goes into Moab and then intermarries. And then the husbands die, and all is left are the women. And she chooses to go back, which is an incredible scandal. And yet God weaves his purposes through her, and she winds up to be David's great-grandmother. So this is chosenness. This is the and again, it's that paradox that you're chosen as a created creature to reflect God's love. And then the people of God, which includes Christians, have been chosen to be the means by which God restores the planet. And in a lot of ways, the final battle has been won on the cross, and now we're announcing the battle has been won. And nation by nation is either saying yes or no. You know, so you notice that God just doesn't declare the whole thing fixed by brute force. He keeps using people. He keeps choosing people to announce his good news.
That's good. All right. Well, let's just wrap it up with our last question that we always talk about is now, what do we do with all this? With knowing all this, what can we do and what should we do as Christians?
Well, I dive into how have you been chosen. Know yourself well and get to know the kind of God who's called you by name. And, you know, some of that is there's all kinds of instruments that can help you see where God has shown up in your life. We do a thing called the Life Map Timeline, and many of us have been trained in it, so almost all staff can help you with that. And the other is just do an inventory of what are you good at, what are you bad at, what do you like doing, what do you not like doing. where do you tend to feel most fully alive, especially when serving people?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, are you a musician? Are you a writer? You know, who are you? And then you begin to ask God, so being me, and then there was some intentionality in how you put me together, and adding all my life experiences and my strengths and my sweet spot, God, how can I use this to represent you and proclaim your good news in both what I do and what I say to other people?
Mm-hmm.
And then just real practically, just every morning, God, are there some people you want me to connect with, and can you show me what needs to be said?
Mm-hmm.
Just start actively asking God, what are you up to and how can I join you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to a Starbucks. How can I spread your love as I stand in line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and in some cases, is there someone hurting who needs a conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. The thing that's sticking out to me from this that I'm going to try to remember, is chosen for purpose and responsibility, not mm-hmm. entitlement and privilege.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing to keep in mind as well.
Now, we didn't go to some of the verses that they go with predestination.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, we could, but I think I would rather concentrate on this way of understanding how God weaves his purposes through us
mm-hmm.
as an entirely different analysis system, but it gets at the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
How is God sovereign in our lives?
Yeah. Well, and we did a whole episode on predestination that people can go check out if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, cool. Anything we missed that you want to say to wrap up?
No, this is just kind of fun. I think I'm just going through my notes, and I think we've pretty well covered everything.
Okay.
Yeah, we did.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us today. And as always, if you have any questions on a previous topic or suggestions for a future one, we would love to hear from you. You can click the link in the description to submit those. That's linktree.com/wordwithweb. We'll talk to you next time.
You bet. Take care.